Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Hesitation to the rim. Right hand reverse is good. Timeout Hawks. As it's Dame time once again for Milwaukee.
Bucks Talk starts now.
And they fight the Bucks to the bitter end, but Milwaukee comes away with a 127-121 victory in Atlanta in our 10 games over 500.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia.
Well, obviously still quite a bit of season left for the Bucks, but you could not be more pleased with where this team currently is and where it appears to be headed, as well as, you know, from 2-8 to 10 games above 500 now. Still fourth in the Eastern Conference. You did get a little bit of help with the New York Knicks losing. However, the help that you need now go forward is losses to the Indiana Pacers and the Detroit Pistons. So you will have your say yet four more times total against those two teams. And as early as next week, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but you got some big games looming. Your final matchup with the Cleveland Cavaliers is Sunday night at Fiserv Forum. Talked about this team being in a much different spot now opposed to when those games were played earlier this season against teams like the Knicks, certainly like the Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics. This is your last real litmus test here against the Cavs, just to see how does the new version of the Bucks, how does it stack up and look against, as of right now, the best team in the Eastern Conference, 50-10 on the season, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Still got one more game with the Knicks that's going to come later on in the season. It is at home. But next week, 1 week from today, on the road in Indiana against the Pacers. And then less than a week later, Saturday nights in Milwaukee, home against the Indiana Pacers. So you win one of those two games, just one, you will secure the tiebreaker against Indiana this season, which is going to be invaluable, not only against the Pacers, but the Detroit Pistons as well. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A really gritty win for this Bucks team. It was night two of a back-to-back for the Atlanta Hawks. I tend to kind of shy away from the back-to-back talk, especially with younger teams. I'm not saying it's not an issue. It's less of an issue with younger teams, and especially teams that play like the Atlanta Hawks do. But the way that they won last night and the way that they were in this game, think about this, too. How few games we've seen that have not been competitive for the Bucks, not just since the trade deadline, not just since the All-Star break, really for most of this back half of the schedule. That's been one of the bigger changes. And more importantly, from this win tonight, it was the fourth quarter offense for the Bucks, and some things that not only tonight, you go back against the Dallas Mavericks and really a couple of games prior to that as well. One of the things that is really starting to stand out about this offense, one of the things that as you watch the Bucks, you've noticed most in terms of their shot portfolio and how they've changed things just a little bit, perhaps just enough to move that offensive number up there in the fourth quarter and as a whole as well. You feel good about where the defense is, but we've said this countless times. Now you just got to see some movement and improvement with the offense, and we have certainly seen that tonight and during this stretch of play where the Bucks have now won seven of their last eight games. It is an important stretch they're currently in and will have up until that game against the Cleveland Cavaliers, because starting Sunday is when the schedule really starts to pick up for the Bucks. So these next two games now that you have, very important to take all the opportunities that you have, and they are going to have quite a few over the course of these two games. We'll explain why after this, but again, Bucks take down the Hawks tonight, 127-121 in Atlanta, 35-25, 10 games above 500 now for the first time this season. More after this on Bucks Talk.
Porter into the front court on the left wing. Has Niang on him. Eyeing him up. Crossed over. Gets into the paint. Follow a jumper is good and one. Niang can't believe it, but Porter starting to put on his show here in the early fourth for the Bucks.
Kevin Porter Jr., certainly one of the more impressive pieces in this win tonight, and that's largely what we've seen from KPJ since the trade that brought him here to Milwaukee. All of the pieces that the Bucks acquired have found their own ways to contribute to this team. You heard after the game, if you were listening to our network coverage, Doc Rivers really continued to rave about Kyle Kuzma and, you know, what he's brought to the group since this trade. And we talked about the fourth quarter offense coming into play tonight, the second worst in the league in terms of their offensive rating. You know, Doc, after the game tonight, just talking about how they attacked coming out of timeouts and even saying, look, the guys are really paying attention now that there's things that we install and work on, and we're finding these mismatches. I referenced a few of them earlier, but you've started to see more and more of Brooke Lopez rolling. You know, you go back to that game against the Mavs where he was heavily doing that. And, you know, you don't need your big to be a rim roller all the time. You still need some of that spacing with Giannis. But I do think, as the Bucks have discovered here, maybe it's more beneficial to have a little bit more of a split and not just Brooke screens and he pops, you know, takes the three-pointers to kind of space the floor a little bit more for Giannis and keep that part of the paint open. What we've seen is the chemistry between Giannis and Damian Lillard is at levels we haven't seen from this duo. You know, certainly not last season. We weren't seeing quite this much of rhythm and chemistry earlier in the season. It's there now. I think that's one of the things that sticks out about this offense, the comfort and familiarity between both Giannis and Damian Lillard. But you're seeing more things like a short roll from Giannis and how teams choose to defend that. If you flash bodies, if Brooke Lopez is in the dunker spot, you know, again, as Doc said tonight, if you help off a Brooke, that's a seven-footer that you're giving up a dunk to that close to the rim. That's what we've seen much more these past couple of games, using that. And think about the amount of looks the Bucks got around the rim tonight. They're the bigger team against almost any team they're going to play against. When your front court is Giannis, Brooke Lopez, and Kyle Kuzma, even Taurean Prince is your two-guard, got a lot more size than just about anybody you're going to go up against. So that's how you're going to have to win these games. Before, Doc Rivers said, you know, if this were the Olympics, we're not going to win a track meet. We got to win the shot put event. That's largely your strength still, but you've at least introduced components where you can start to win a foot race. And Kyle Kuzma is a big part of that. As Doc again said, having Kuz, one of the things that's really jumped out is how good of a cutter he is. And you can use him for so many things out of timeouts, even just attacking the rim. You know, we talked about it earlier in the season, defensively for the Bucks, when you run into problems. Think about some of those games very, very early in the season. Paint touches were what killed the Bucks. You go back to that first weekend with that loss to the Chicago Bulls, the loss to the Brooklyn Nets just a couple of days later as well. One of the things that really impacted them, paint touches. The opponent getting into the paint, forcing the defense to collapse, and the Bucks reacting from there. The Bucks now starting to do that more and more to the opponents that they're going up against, and you're seeing what that opens up, not just for Giannis, but your shooters as well. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We get a couple of comments here. Q asking if we are a believer in Kevin Porter Jr. I don't think I was ever a non-believer. There's a lot to like with Kevin Porter Jr. Certainly the athleticism and defense that he brings to this group. But look, we can't bury the lead, I suppose. Giannis had a triple-double. Giannis was terrific. Kyle Kuzma, as of this morning, you didn't think Kyle Kuzma was going to play. He was still doubtful and wasn't upgraded to questionable until early afternoon, doing this on a sprained ankle, which looked pretty nasty in that game against the Dallas Mavericks. But Kevin Porter Jr., I don't know that the Bucks win this game without what he did in the fourth quarter tonight. You know, you look at first half, and look, I get the questions and the pushback of, why are you going these minutes without both Giannis and Damian Lillard on the floor? Giannis is still at this minutes restriction where it's going to be in the low 30s, and Doc has said Dame is on a bit of a minutes restriction as well. He's still consistently right around 37, 38 minutes, but this was kind of one of the trade-offs is in the regular season, you're going to have minutes where one of those guys isn't on the floor. Chris Middleton, in theory, was the guy that would keep you afloat in the past. If you could have both of those guys off the floor, you could play Chris with Brooke Lopez or Chris with somebody else, and that's what we're going to lean on. But now that it's just a two-headed monster and you're monitoring the minutes of Giannis, you're going to come across stretches where both of the guys are off the floor. That is not going to happen in the playoffs. I feel pretty strongly in stating you're not going to have to worry about that in the postseason. But I point it out because in the first half, when the Bucks did go to those stretches, or that stretch, it only occurred one part in the game in the first half, twice in the game as a whole. When there's no Giannis or Dame on the floor, they're outscored by 8 points. And it's not a total disaster. At least it wasn't, 15, where everything was slipping away and you're up by five, and the next thing you know, holy cow, they're down by 12. But they're outscored by 8. And we said at the time that that happened, keep an eye on these situations. Keep an eye on what the Bucks do to make adjustments. Who's going to provide the spark for this group? Because that's a decent enough job of weathering the storm. If you do even better, instead of outscored by 8, if the next time this stretch comes up, assuming it's going to be early in the fourth quarter, late in the third quarter, you're outscored by 4, 5, somewhere along there. You're starting to feel pretty good about where things are headed. And that's exactly what happened. The Bucks outscored the Atlanta Hawks in those minutes with no Giannis and no Damian Lillard in the fourth quarter. And the biggest reason why, you started to see them get out and run even more. And granted, there was a couple of opportunities they were unable to capitalize on, but they were pushing the pace. And Kevin Porter Jr. started to take over offensively. 2 3-point plays from KPJ, finished the game with 15 points, scored 12 of those 15 points in the fourth quarter. It is undeniable the talent that Kevin Porter Jr. has. I think if we're sticking to on the court only, the big question with KPJ was, is he really a point guard? Is he truly a guy that you can confidently say for stretches, albeit limited, where Dame isn't on the floor, we trust you to run the show here? He had always been kind of a combo guard with the Cavs and the Houston Rockets. With the Clippers, this was the role he was asked to perform in. But that was the big question in terms of the on-the-court performance is, can he fill this role? And so far, it's been a resounding yes. You look back to what he did in that game against the Minnesota Timberwolves that frankly started this run for the Bucks in this stretch of play. Tonight, another one of them. You just continue to see these big moments. And I think that's one of the big things. I was talking about this with somebody from the Clippers when the Clippers were in town recently here, in that, Ben Simmons, right? All the attention that was paid to Ben Simmons going to the Clippers and what that meant, like the role that you're asking Ben Simmons to play. Hey, this makes a ton of sense. Like, this might be, in terms of fit, the best spot Ben Simmons has been in throughout his whole career. Philadelphia, the pressure there of being the number one pick and what you really needed from him alongside Joel Embiid, the player you needed him to be. Not to relitigate everything that happened in Game 7 against the Atlanta Hawks, but it was never the same after that. I think there were expectations heaped upon Ben Simmons that, frankly, in watching him play collegiately and seeing what the shortcomings were, we probably should have realized we're asking him to do something we should not ask. The Brooklyn Nets, a totally different scenario. It's not a winning basketball team at the moment. He didn't get a chance to play in that competitive atmosphere. Now you go to the Clippers. He is not the number two option. He is not the number three option. He is the ultimate Swiss Army knife role player, where it's just get out there, play defense. You're a backup five / backup point guard. Push the pace. Run the offense for some spurts in those moments where James Harden is off the floor. And just be the ultimate glue guy and role player. And that is probably what Ben Simmons is best equipped to do. What his skill sets really match, and I think you've seen that so far with the Clippers. But I point all this out because I think to a lesser extent you can have a similar conversation about Kevin Porter Jr. You think back to the lift that he had to take on, and granted, it was a much different Houston Rockets team. When KPJ was on that team, it was a younger team. Ime Udoka was not the head coach. Those are not guys that were getting prepared to play winning basketball and building that culture. he was the primary guy, or one of the primary guys, to score the basketball. Cleveland, kind of a hybrid fit where it's still trying to find that role. You come here to Milwaukee, and it's pretty clear. The minutes are going to be around this. Here's what we ask of you. We'll let you find your own shot. In those moments where you are playing with Giannis, let's look to set him up. But basically, we just want you to be a role player that sets a spark for us. And so far, Kevin Porter Jr. has really thrived at that. We all love Ryan Rollins. And by the way, the good news for the Bucks, Ryan Rollins has been upgraded to a standard contract just through the end of this season, though. So we're going to have the restricted free agency conversation at some point. But Ryan Rollins is in tow. Like, you couldn't have played him in a game again until you upgraded him. He had run out of his 50 days on that two-way deal. But as much as we've liked what we've seen from Ryan Rollins, the way that Kevin Porter Jr. plays and some of the strengths that he brings to this team, those aren't the strengths of Ryan Rollins. Ryan Rollins still very much a combo guard. I do think you really like what you've continued to see from Ryan Rollins. I think he gives you just as good of shooting, but it's the whole package with Kevin Porter Jr. And what stands out most, the deceleration and how he gets to that elbow with ease. That's his spot. That's where both of those three-point plays came from, getting fouled on a jump shot. He just slows things down and plays at his own pace, and that's what creates those mismatches and creates those shots for him. And again, I don't know if the Bucks win this game if it weren't for those first 6 minutes in the fourth quarter from Kevin Porter Jr., where he scored 12 of his 15 points. He and Gary Trent, I mean, up and down the list tonight, up and down the roster, I should say. Kevin Porter Jr., impactful. Gary Trent Jr., another very solid game. A little bit of a sluggish start from Brooke Lopez, but he gave you some big moments. Obviously, Giannis has a triple-double. Damian Lillard, largely efficient tonight. Hit one of the bigger shots or got to the rim to finish to give you one of the bigger baskets of the game. So you just continue. And Kyle Kuzma, again, as we mentioned, doing all this on a sprained ankle. We didn't think he was going to play this morning. Some of the plays that Kyle Kuzma makes, the way he's really helped push the pace and change things for this team, starting to feel really good. And look, the next couple of weeks are going to tell you a lot about this team. But doing what they're doing now is the important part. Take advantage of the opportunities you have, because those are going to start to disappear once we get into the middle portion of the month of March. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk, as it's just, it's starting to come together. It really does feel like that. We'll take a look at some of the updated numbers, fourth quarter efficiency for the Bucks, and a little bit closer look at the standings, because that is really the conversation to be had down the stretch this season. A gritty win tonight for the Bucks, who now return home to take on the Mavs. And by the way, talk a little bit about that Mavericks opponent and just what the city of Dallas and Maverick fans are currently going through right now, and just how banged up that team is going to be when they come into town tomorrow night. We'll get into all that after this on Bucks Talk.
Now, we scored 127 points. We're 11 for 37 from the three, and that, for this team, that never happens. We had great shots and didn't make them. Probably missed seven layups at the basket. So I liked a lot of our pace, because that's how we got easy shots.
Yeah, I mean, not only the 11 made threes, but not a high efficiency either. Like, this wasn't the Bucks making 11 of 28 three-point attempts. They shot below 30% from the outside. And a lot of times, that's where we really see the offense crater. Like, when the Bucks have efficiency numbers from the outside that low, and it's not just the Bucks, to be clear, a lot of teams, when the efficiency from the outside is that low, you kind of get into this trap of, well, let's just keep shooting them because one of them is eventually going to go through. I mean, it's the opposite of the Muhammad Gay approach that we saw tonight. Look, let him keep shooting them. Eventually, he's going to miss. Not just one, some of these threes. The Grant Williams treatment, if you will. But it's the movement. But it does. Somebody else was talking to me about this, and I couldn't agree more. It does feel like this offense has become much less stagnant and much less kind of sitting around and watching guys take over since the trade deadline. That is not by any means to single out Chris Middleton and say, well, this was the problem. This is what slowed down your offense. I think the big piece is, again, just the injection of athleticism. It's not just Kyle Kuzma. It's the whole mix. But offensively especially, the component that Kyle Kuzma brings, you know, think about a couple of times in this game that we saw Giannis would get the ball at the elbow. He goes to that drop step and tries to spin towards the basket. If he's walled off, now we've seen much more of Brook Lopez hovering in the dunker spot. You can drop it off to him, or you get Kyle Kuzma darting from beyond the three-point line, cutting towards the basket for a very easy dunk. Like these things, Kyle Kuzma doesn't even have to score. He just has to make those cuts and carry some of that attention, drag some of the defenders away, and just give Giannis just enough of a sliver. We've heard countless coaches talk about this. It's remarkable how little space he needs. I think Billy Donovan was the guy that really started to talk about it at the most length last year when he was asked about, hey, what has stood out when we were first starting to see Giannis's efficiency really start to climb above 60% shooting? And he was asked, what stands out? How is he doing this? And he was the first one I remember pointing out, look, it's he just finds so many angles to attack the basket, and he does not need all that much space. Like, we've reviewed the film, and we can see moments where we feel like we got him walled off. We got two guys that are there ready to meet him at the point of attack and stop him, but just the smallest sliver. He knows how to create enough room and kind of angle himself through that traffic and into the rim. Those are the things that are made even easier when you have not just Kyle Kuzma, anybody cutting to the rim, taking away some of that attention where you at least have to peel off and say, well, wait a minute, we can't let this guy flash unattended. That gives Giannis just enough space to either get that basket himself or find somebody else that's going to be wide open, because the attention to a cutter and the double team, presumably, that Giannis is facing, and we've seen a ton of that since these trades have taken place. So good news, bad news situation here. The bad news is, look, we may not see any movement or enough movement on this by the time we complete the regular season because of the hole that the Bucks presumably dug themselves earlier in the season with some of the offensive inefficiency earlier in the game. After this game tonight, the Bucks still have the 29th rated offense in the fourth quarter of games. They are a 105.4 offensive rating. The Brooklyn Nets are 30th at 104.9, but when I say, look, we may not see the necessary movement here, the 28th offense in the fourth quarter belongs to the Houston Rockets, who have a 108.4 offensive rating, 3 points per 100 possessions better than the Bucks. So you've already anchored yourself with, what, two-thirds of a schedule's worth of performance this season to see that offense sink to the levels in the fourth quarter it has. That's the bad news. The good news is twofold, I suppose. The good news is the defense is still really good in the fourth quarter, fifth best in the league for season as a whole. But the more encouraging news is if we just look at games, not since the trade deadline, but since the second half schedule, since the post-All-Star break, and I suppose I should have dug back a little deeper too and included that Minnesota Timberwolves game, but since coming out of the All-Star break, still room for improvement, but the Bucks have a 119.1 offensive rating in the fourth quarter, which is 11th best in the league, much closer to where you expect to see them finish. And the defense has been even better. We said season as a whole, it's a 108, a defensive rating. Since the All-Star break, it's a 104.7 defensive rating. So it's starting to, in a small, albeit small sample size, it's starting to look on both ends like the right type of mix you need to really make some noise in the postseason. It's one of the things we mentioned quite a bit about Denver Nuggets, right? When you hear constantly, well, you need a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense in the league. People were quick to point out the Denver Nuggets to win a championship. I see you need to be in the top 10 to win a championship. People were quick to point out the Denver Nuggets and say, well, Denver was outside of the top 10. And that's true. But Denver's defense was much different after the All-Star break. Like, that's when the pieces started to fall into place with guys like Aaron Gordon and some of the other moves, young guys really starting to establish themselves. Denver started to find their footing defensively after the All-Star break, where I believe they were closer to 10th. Still not in the top 10, but closer to 10th after the All-Star break. That, to me, has always been the recipe. Like, you either need to be in the top 10 of both of these categories, or you need to be elite in one of them and pretty good, close to 10 in the other. Bucks are basically there. They're checking off one of those two boxes. You got to fall in there. Bucks are there since the All-Star break. It's only 7 games. We have to, you know, see this number look the same after 17 games and after 20 games. And it's especially going to be challenging. And we'll learn a lot about this team the next couple of weeks here when that schedule starts to pick up, beginning Sunday with a big back-to-back, night 2 against the Cleveland Cavaliers. But these are the opportunities that have been laid in front of the Bucks. We talked going into that game Saturday night. Hey, the Mavs are going to be shorthanded, literally, with no Anthony Davis, no Daniel Gafford, no Derek Lively. Like, you're going to have a big size advantage. You should take advantage of this. It's gotten even worse for Dallas since Saturday night. I mentioned the injury report on the network postgame show. We'll get to that again in just a second. But the Bucks, even though it's night 2 of a back-to-back, you need to expect to win that game tomorrow night against the Dallas Mavericks because of the personnel that is not going to be on the floor. Then you get 2 days of rest. Then you go into another back-to-back. But the first game is against an Orlando Magic team that has been nowhere near the same level that they were earlier in the season. Even defensively, those numbers and metrics have started to slide just a little bit. They continue to get dealt blow after blow. Offense has always been a challenge for the last couple of years for the Orlando Magic. And now they just lost Jalen Suggs for the remainder of the season as well. So that's another game you got to look at and say, look, we have a big advantage here. We have to take advantage of all these games where we have some type of advantage, whether it be the opponent personnel that's available, their record, home and road splits, whatever it is, every advantage you have from here on out, you have to capitalize on that because of how much this schedule really starts to change for the Bucks. Starting 1 week from today, really, but Sunday when it starts with the Cleveland Cavaliers, the final time you'll see them in the regular season, and it's in Milwaukee. So they've done that. They've taken advantage of these winnable games, and they've started to look better along the way. Like, not only the result, the process is looking much, much better as well. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Never thought I would see the day when we see comments praising Brooke Lopez and asking for Brooke Lopez to be singled out. Rightfully so, I thought, especially last couple of quarters down the stretch of this game, Brooke Lopez played terrific. And finding, I don't want to say a new role for Brooke Lopez, but a couple of things stood out. We'll save it for coming back after the break. It's not just where you're positioning him. A couple of other things stood out and why it remains important. You can't just look at this and say, well, this is the new strategy. Have Brooke Lopez play around the rim. There's a couple of moments in this game that stood out. Even though the Bucks didn't get the result you were hoping for, a couple of those moments and how defenses reacted to Brooke Lopez showed you this might be the right mix we're looking for. We'll explain what we mean after this on Bucks Talk.
With the ball across the timeline. Screen from Giannis, working the two-man game on the short roll underneath the Brooke Lopez, who stuffed it with two hands. All the attention to Dame and Giannis, and Brooke was left alone underneath. Bucks lead by 2.
So, a couple of things that stood out about Brooke Lopez tonight. We've talked about where they're kind of stashing him more. You're not asking him to play around the rim all the time. But, again, you go back to the comments from Doc Rivers in the postgame in that, look, if you help off of him, and that's who you use to come double-team Giannis. I mean, think about that conundrum, too. Is, depending on where you're situated, when you got Giannis playing at the elbow and starting the offense there, you can help off presumably a shooter that's stashed in the corner, whether that's A.J. Green, Gary Trent, Torian Prince, Damian Lillard at the top of the key. You can help off one of those two guys, but then you got a shooter that's one pass away. Or you can help off of Brooke Lopez in those moments where you have him in the dunker spot hovering around the rim. And then again, you're leaving a 7-footer wide open, or at least with a mismatch when you have to rotate some help over, a guard from the perimeter is coming over and has to take on that assignment. So you're basically giving up 2 points around the rim. The inclusion of that, I don't think that needs to be your offense every single time down the floor, but the threat of that and using that more to keep the offense flowing, the cuts from Kyle Kuzma, that was another thing. The Bucks were really killing the Hawks on some of those back cuts early in this game. Something it doesn't feel like we saw at all, if not a lot of, to be sure, earlier in the season. But Brook Lopez is still a threat to shoot the basketball. And, I mean, there's this notion that exists that Brook's a terrible shooter. Brook takes shots way too early on the shot clock. Too deep of a shot. He was 1 of 5 tonight. The shot was not falling. But there's at least 3 instances where the way you have him positioned, you help off using his guy or somebody else onto Giannis, and Brook Lopez all of a sudden is open. There's 3 times that I saw either Onyeka Okongwu or Clint Capela hard closeouts on Brook Lopez, who then put the ball on the floor and either got into the paint for that little push shot floater or set something else up. Like, that's the mix you're looking for, where you can really punish teams with your size and with Brook Lopez hovering around the rim and in the paint. He can still knock down threes, but just the threat of him, like, you can't soft close out. This isn't Giannis. And even that, Giannis has taken more threes of late, which I know probably induces a groan from a lot of Bucks fans. Even the way that guys have started to position a little bit, I think you start to see more of that tonight. Like, you're not going to hard close out on Giannis as you would Brook Lopez or Dame Lillard, certainly, or any other shooter on this team. But a lot of times in the past, when Giannis just cut that out of his diet altogether, guys were just, we're still going to play off and we're going to be set defensively. Now it's at least the thought of, is he going to shoot this, where you're taking a step forward? And you're not, again, you're not closing out hard on him, but just that little bit of hesitation can open things up for Giannis. As we just said before, he doesn't need all that much space. He just needs a sliver. And if you're in your own head thinking, is he going to shoot here? Or, you know, do I need to position myself for the rebound? Do I need to look at who he's going to pass it to? That's all he needs to open things up. So I think you have to be very pleased with what you're starting to see offensively. Again, the numbers that we shared, they're much better in the fourth quarter coming out of the All-Star break. Right around 10th, they're still in the top 10 defensively. That's the mix. That's the mix that you need to see. Continue to push things offensively and score in different ways. You know, 6 times or 6 double-digit scores once again for a 6th time. All of that since the trade deadline. They did it 7 times in the, what, 50 games played prior to the trade deadline. So I think it speaks to, again, you're still top-heavy in the sense that it's Giannis and Damian Lillard atop the roster here, but you were really top-heavy before. With Giannis, Dame, Chris Middleton was your third guy, Brook Lopez, hey, he's your fourth. It's not a big three, it's a big four. Now it has become clear. This is Giannis and Damian Lillard. The other guys, your role players. Like, hit open shots, create some of those looks, cut to the basket, knock down the open looks when you get them, play defense. That's what we need from you, because these two guys, that's what's going to carry the load offensively for this team. Very, 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 very shorthanded Dallas Mavericks team that is going to be coming into Milwaukee tomorrow night. They're already in Milwaukee, but the injury report that they have initially submitted is fascinating. And these are the games you got to take advantage of if you're the Bucks. I've talked before about, look, these are challenges for any team. When you look across the floor and you don't see this guy or this guy or this guy or this guy, you can let your guard down a little bit. It is so important, even though it's night 2 of a back-to-back, that does not happen tomorrow. When you look at the availability the Mavericks are going to be bringing into Milwaukee tomorrow night, we'll run through that injury report, preview the matchup with the Dallas Mavericks, and take a look at the standings, the very tight Eastern Conference standings. I mentioned the Knicks lost. Is it too little, too late on that front for the Bucks? We'll wrap things up with that conversation after this on Bucks Talk. All right, tomorrow night, night 2 of a back-to-back for the Bucks, the Dallas Mavericks are the opponent. And let's clean this up or address this real quick. I said, hey, maybe we should have included that game against the Timberwolves going into the All-Star break, too. The numbers are even better if we lump that one in and just look at the fourth quarter specifically. Since that game, February 12th, the Bucks have a 120.1 offensive rating in the fourth quarter, which is 11th best in the league, knocking on the door of the top 10. And a 107.2 defensive rating, which is ninth. So, on average, you're a top 10 team in the fourth quarter of games. Much, much different and a much prettier story to tell than second worst offense in the league and an elite defense for the season as a whole. So, let's continue to keep an eye on that number and see if you can, you know, push close to fifth in both of these categories from that T-Wolves game. Go for it. I know you were shorthanded in that game, but some of these guys that have engineered the turnaround for the Bucks in terms of their play style and throwing more waves of defenders out there, they were all active in that game. Kevin Porter Jr., at least, and Kyle Kuzma. Didn't see Jericho Sims until after the All-Star break, but starting with that game where it feels like that's been the launching point for this Bucks team to find their footing, numbers back it up. Now, let's also be cognizant of the fact, yes, you are 7-1. From the moment that game was played. And it feels great. Like, hey, these things are starting to work here. Pieces are falling into place. Bucks won six straight games coming out of the All-Star break last year, and we saw what ultimately unfolded. It wasn't just the injury to Giannis. They were really, I don't know if I'd say taking on water, but you were starting to see a little bit of a downturn in their play towards the end. Really, after that win against the Oklahoma City Thunder, that was the high point in the season for the Bucks, and then it started to really gradually fall off a bit, and the Giannis injury just sank their ship, essentially. But yeah, since the Timberwolves game, no complaints on either end of the floor with what we've seen from this Bucks team. The opponent tomorrow night, the Dallas Mavericks. Man, to say Dallas is going through it right now, I mean, we're all familiar, I would assume, with the curse of the Bambino and that Babe Ruth curse when the Red Sox traded him to the Yankees and everything that ensued afterwards. Are we going to have the curse of Luka Doncic? I mean, all of the optics to come from that deal, the shockwaves it sent throughout social media and the league close to midnight on, February 1st, I believe it was, when Luka Doncic was traded to the Los Angeles Lakers and having to read it over three times just to make sure, like, wait, that Luka Doncic? Everything that's happened to the Dallas Mavericks since, I mean, is this the curse of Luka Doncic?
Have you given your thoughts on that trade yet on this show?
Maybe it was ridiculous.
Right. Okay. Just wanted to confirm.
I've seen, have you gotten immersed in all the conspiracy theories going on?
Oh, 100%. The new owners down there, I'm all about it.
So you believe?
I think there's more to it than their philosophies on the court, 100%.
So for those unaware, don't assume knowledge, there is this grand conspiracy, like they are purposely tanking the value of the franchise, the interest in the franchise, similar to things that we saw done in Oakland with the Athletics, because they want to move the franchise to Las Vegas. They made their money in gambling. Legislature in Texas votes every 2 years, and it seems as though they're getting the feelers out there and starting to hear it's not going to get approved for legalized gambling in the state of Texas, so you're going to have to wait another 2 years down the road. And all the talk, even around the time they bought the team, that, hey, they want to build a new arena, they want to build a casino that's attached to the arena, they want to make this the event, and if that's not going to happen, they want to move to Las Vegas. It is, I mean, sometimes the most likely reason is the reason. It is entirely likely. It's just an ownership group that doesn't know basketball and thinks this is no different than the business that we run. This is any other business. And that's the way that they're, like, I don't necessarily believe they're playing 5D chess here and just saying, you know what, we're trading Luka Doncic. We're going to start to tank interest in our team. They raised ticket prices, season ticket prices. I know something that's a very sensitive topic around these parts this week.
Yeah, seriously.
They raised ticket prices 9%. That went out yesterday, the other day. I don't know. I just, why would you leave? And I get the gambling component, but Dallas is one of the largest markets.
I was going to say, I think it's like top
five. In the country. Yeah,
like the NBA is not letting that happen
and,
regardless.
Well, and that's the other miss. Like, I think if you're the NBA, like, we don't want to move to Vegas. Like, we're going to have a team in Vegas. We all think expansion is going to happen. It's likely going to be to Seattle and Las Vegas. So why would we waste a team moving to Vegas when we can already get whatever the ticket pack or whatever the price tag is going to be in the billions for an expansion franchise in Las Vegas? Not to mention, it is a massive downgrade in terms of your market size. So, like, it's entertaining to dig through NBA subreddits and Dallas Mavericks Reddit and scope Twitter to see people that cover the Mavericks and the latest intel and things that the Adelson ownership group has said in recent days. I mean, even at the time when they traded Luka Doncic, where you think, my God, you're talking about trading a guy who wasn't committed enough and didn't have enough desire, and you needed somebody that was really invested in winning games and that committed, and one of the names that you mentioned was Shaquille O'Neal instead of Dirk Nowitzki, who has a statue right outside the arena. I just think it's a group that doesn't know what they're doing. But,
yeah.
I mean, last night, I was watching that game between the Mavs and the Kings, and you could hear Kyrie Irving scream. It was an awkward fall, but as soon as you saw that, you thought, oh, man, what happened here? Like, as if it couldn't go any worse. I mentioned the injury report on the network postgame show. They have 8 guys on the injury report for tomorrow. None of them are two-way players that are out for G League availability. Like, these are guys that you expected to play. They are names that are recognizable to even casual basketball fans. And 7 of the 8 are already out. The 8th is doubtful. Anthony Davis, out. Daniel Gafford, out. Derek Lively, out. So again, no bigs for the Dallas Mavericks. Moses Brown started that game over the weekend. His 10-day contract's up. And because of the moves the Mavs made at the trade deadline, they're hard capped, so they can't add him again on a 10-day contract. Jaden Hardy also got injured in that game last night with an ankle sprain. He's out. Kyrie Irving is out. Dante Exum is out. PJ Washington. I saw earlier on the broadcast, on the TV broadcast, FanDuel Sports Network knew, well, all these guys are out. I guess let's center our graphics around PJ Washington. He's out now. Caleb Martin is doubtful. I mean,
what's the over-under on Klay Thompson 3-point attempts?
Well, the last thing I'll say about the Dallas Mavericks, there's been talks now that they're leaning towards maybe we just shut down Anthony Davis for the season, which at this point, why not? They're clinging to the final spot in the play-in tournament. The Phoenix Suns are still 3 games back of them. Like, that shows you, man, what is going on in Phoenix? But, I mean, have the Mavs reached this point? And this is why we say it is potentially the curse of Luka Doncic. Kyrie Irving is very likely never going to be the same again. He turns, is it 33 or 34? His birthday is in a couple of weeks. Regardless, he's in his mid-30s. He's not going to play next year, I would have to assume. If the injury occurs this late, it's the same thing Jamal Murray went through. A little bit later in the season, we saw from Jamal Murray a couple of years ago when he tore his ACL. And Jamal Murray had the benefit of being 10 years younger than Kyrie Irving when this occurred. But I would assume he's not going to play next year. And then you have to question a player that's in their mid-30s, a torn ACL, like, how much burst is he going to have go forward? He's probably not going to be the same guy. Klay Thompson has already dealt with a mountain of injuries. He's getting up there. Anthony Davis, you can make the joke of Anthony Davis's injury history, but has it reached the point where you thought you were smarter than everybody else because we got out in front of Luka Doncic, we didn't believe in his commitment, and we're gonna build around defense? Do you have to tear this whole thing down over the summer? Like, don't you have to seriously consider, knowing Kyrie's not playing next year, don't you have to seriously, especially if you don't get out of the play-in tournament? In other words, get into the lottery, not saying win the play-in tournament. Like, avoid it altogether and don't make the playoffs and don't have the benefit of that type of draft pick, don't you have to seriously explore trading Anthony Davis and Klay Thompson this summer?
I think so. I mean, as bad as the Luka trade was, theoretically, on the court, it could have been pretty good, right? As soon as this season, next season.
In theory, fine, yeah. Like, in a vacuum, if you tell me this is what we're doing and why, sure. It's right. Just
but now all that's out the window anyway, so we're never going to know.
They were in the NBA Finals last summer. They were the team that came on really strong right around this time of the year. As we just said, hey, it kind of feels like the Bucks are doing this too. And I mentioned a couple of times, is this Kyle Kuzma trade, is this kind of similar to the P.J. Washington trade last year where everybody wrote off P.J. Washington, didn't play on winning teams, hasn't experienced the playoffs, he's a losing player. Why are the Mavs so focused on getting him and what's this guy going to do for them? And look what he did do in re-engineering that defense and how well they played down the stretch. Can we have a similar conversation for Kyle Kuzma and the impact that he's brought? So it is going to be absolutely fascinating to hear from the Mavs broadcast team and Chuck Cooperstein and everybody else tomorrow in what is your take off the record? What is your take on what's going on with your team right now? But yeah, that's why we have stressed, look, you got an opportunity when we just rattle off those names that are all going to be out for the Mavs tomorrow. Got to take advantage of this. Got to take advantage of the fact that the Magic are really going through it too, and they're not going to have Jalen Suggs because starting Sunday, that's when it picks up. You got the Cavs, got two games with the Pacers, got the Oklahoma City Thunder again. Then you got the West Coast road trip coming up. So when we keep saying, hey, fifth most difficult schedule, toughest schedule in the Eastern Conference, this is the big part that backs that up. So an important win tonight, important to get a win again tomorrow night against the Dallas Mavericks. 7 o'clock tip tomorrow from Fiserv Forum for the Bucks and the Mavericks. 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.